Thank you so much for joining us on Super Bracket Bros. My name is Jay, your host and your personal bracketologist. And as always, sitting across from me, I'm joined by my co-host and your time-sliding, shooty, McShooty face boy, Elias Stokes. How are you doing today, Eli?
I'm doing all right. I'm enjoying my time-sliding, whatever that means.
You've watched the movie, right?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure that we're more than halfway through the season. So
see, I'm referencing the time that I didn't watch it. See, there's two timelines going on. I'm sliding in between.
I got you. Okay. Obviously, you know what? You're right. The you're playing 5D chess with your jokes, and I'm over here with a single 2D playing board, and you know, I just didn't step up to the plate. So, you know, I appreciate you. Well done. Well done, Eli. Thank you very much. But welcome to Super Bracket Bros. This is the podcast where we take 32 fictional characters, put them in a tournament against each other to see just who is the best of the best. And my COVID voice is gone, and I feel so good recording this compared to last time. So I am super excited for today's episode where we are talking our one seed, Cable, going up against the number four seed, Juliana Blake from Deathloop. So I think this is going to be a really interesting fight. Two really interesting characters, as we were just discussing, actually are quite similar. And I'm looking forward to getting into that a little bit with our guests. We have, once again, two guests today. Our first guest today is the Intergalactic Pinecone. In addition to being a world-class gentleman, all-around great guy, the Intergalactic Pinecone is a certified streamer with a capital S. That's right. We have expanded the boundaries of the Super Bracket Bros multiverse beyond that of podcasters and gone and got ourselves a genuine Twitch gamer. You can catch him playing games such as Mario Kart, Donkey Kong Country, Splatoon, a bit of Pokemon, and a bit of just about everything else, too. If you are into games, of course, you're going to have a good time. But if you're into just hanging out with a very solid, well-crafted community of folks and who are friendly and accepting, then you have to check out our first guest today, Morgan Remington. How are you doing today, Morgan?
I am doing A-okay, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm excited for today's episode. I'm excited to have you on. How are you feeling about, one, your first appearance on Super Bracket Bros and today's matchup?
Well, this is a little bit more out of my wheelhouse. This is something more like akin to what my friends might talk about. They like a lot more stuff like this. I'm really more into the nitty-gritty of games itself and game history, especially retro titles. But in terms of like how I'm feeling about the matchup, I was back and forth on this a lot because I just kind of felt like immediately when I read the notes you gave me, I was like, no, Cable would just win. And so I had to kind of think an interesting thought in my head, like, okay, let me kind of go back to some of my footage from way back. Let me read some stuff. So it actually kind of got me thinking more about Deathloop than I had even when I first played it. So I think, creatively speaking, it was a very good exercise just from that standpoint. So I've got a few different thoughts now that I've been able to cultivate from that.
Yeah, this I kind of did the same thing as you did. And I think that's probably going to be a similar case between Eli and our other guests. Is I kind of looked at this and was like, hey, you know, this actually does require a bit of thought. But I'm glad that we can kind of push the boundaries of what you're used to as well. I think today's going to be a great episode, and in part to do with our second guest today, a very familiar face at this point. This will be his third appearance on the podcast so far and third appearance on this very season, previously having joined us for Ash and Bob versus Juliana Blake and the Terminator versus Villanelle. He's been with us for the incredibly close and the not so close battles here on Super Bracket Bros. He is the host of the Dead Drop of Video Games News podcast, where you can catch everything you need to know about the gaming industry in 10 minutes or less. He's out here each week covering the most important and most interesting stories and condensing them all into digestible episodes, which I genuinely love. Please give a warm welcome once again to the show, the Thunder from Down Under, the Australian Kratos himself. If only you could see this beard, folks. Matthew Bliss, how are you doing today, Matt?
I'm great. Just don't ask me where the Thunder reference comes from, because I think you'll have to turn this into an explicit podcast if that's the case.
Well, I thought about Thunder from Down Under before I thought about why I wanted to call you that. And I was like, well, Kratos is going to fight Thor. So I was like, you know what? it retrospectively makes a little sense.
Absolutely. Well, I'm very happy with the Kratos reference. That's
I assumed as much. How are you feeling about today's episode?
I'm the same as you guys. I mean, the matchup we've got is two characters with very much the same drive. Like their backgrounds are very much the same. Their abilities are going to match up pretty well. Time traveling sits in there as well. It's going to be a really interesting thing to talk through. And without us picking one to strongly advocate for against another, I have no idea where it's going to end up. It could very much depend on where we're doing it today.
Well, that's exactly what I hope for every single episode of Super Bracket Bros, is that we have no idea what's going to happen going in. It's sure to make for a great episode today. So, Morgan, let's start with you. Before we kind of get into today's subject, I want to give our audience a chance to get to know you a little bit better. So if you could please, and I understand it's an unfair question, do you have a favorite fictional character of all time?
I went back and forth on this, but I have to settle on an anime character, which is very much out of hat for me because I don't really watch a lot of anime. But this character, I think, is perfect for this show because they exude a lot of power, but they also have really strong, a really strong ideology that I think is really universal, that everybody could understand, even someone that didn't watch it. So I have to pick Vash the Stampede from Trigun. He's an incredibly powerful character that just seemingly can't die. He dodges everything. He's got that classic anime, oh my god, he's so fast kind of thing going on. But at the same time, he really strongly believes in non-lethal force only. And his whole thing is peace. Peace above all else, even at the sacrifice of maybe sometimes people around him, maybe his own self, you know, his body has scars all over it. He's a really interesting character because he's like an extremist on the other side, you know, not violence, but ultra peace, to the point where you say to yourself sometimes when you're watching him through his struggles, you're thinking, God, come on, man, like, defend yourself, like, help yourself. It's almost saintly in a way. So he's a really, really interesting character. I know Trigun's only like 24 episodes, but if anyone hasn't watched it, it's a really good, it's still today, it holds up really well. English dub too, or Japanese if that's what you prefer. Both of them are good. You'll get a really quality experience out of it. And I defy you to not feel some sort of emotion when you watch Vash's journey, because there is an arc. He doesn't stay static. There is an arc, and it's something that, even though I watched it a decade plus ago, still very resonant today, maybe even more resonant now than when I first watched it. So I have to go with Vash the Stampede.
Vash the Stampede. That, I mean, honestly, I've never heard of this. I've never heard of this anime, of this character, but this sounds absolutely incredible. So it's an older anime, though, right?
A 1990s. Early 2000s.
They're making a new adaptation, if I'm believe so, Morgan.
Yep.
Yeah, so we might be getting a new Trigun insert resurgence, so that's exciting.
Hell yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm very intrigued. I mean, I'm intrigued because it's not an anime with 1,000 episodes that I have to catch up on or anything like that. You know, you had me at 24 episodes. I'm not gonna lie. So I'm extremely interested in this, and like the almost, you know, at first I was like, okay, so you're talking like kind of like a Batman character who doesn't really, you know, kill anybody, but it sounds much deeper than that. It sounds really interesting. So I'm. I am going to find this anime and go watch it. That's a fantastic shout out.
You won't regret it.
Thank you.
I remember this was one of the first animes that I caught too, because back in when I was in university, I think it was 2007 or 8, I joined an anime club, which in Australia means someone has a big folder of discs that they've downloaded from the internet, and you can borrow one or two discs a week. And Trigun was one of those. It was a great anime, really good recommendation.
I'm falling behind apparently compared to everybody else on the call today. But Matt, I wanted to swing things over to you. So we've asked you about your favorite fictional character, Kratos. We've asked you about your favorite fictional universe, and you mentioned Final Fantasy X. But today, I ask you a new question. If you could live a day in the life of any fictional character, who would it be?
So I thought about this one a lot, and I wanted to throw things out a little bit, you know, change expectations, because I've got a very diverse kind of diverse palette of things that I enjoy. So I'm going to pick Tim, played by Donald Gleason, in the About Time film that came out in 2013, 12, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know of this film. I'm sure I've watched it, actually.
Yeah, it's a bit of rom-com, bit of sci-fi. Takes a more serious look at, funnily enough, time travel. And Tim, being the main character, discovers that there is a genetic line for the males in his family where they have the ability to travel through time. And the entire film explores probably a tight 20 years of his life where he learns how the time travel works and how it impacts his life. But, and I guess we're in spoiler territory all the time on this podcast, but, you know, fast forward, listener, 30 seconds if you don't want to hear the end of this film, because it is a brilliant film. You should definitely watch it. But by the very end, Tim has a revelation about his time travel where he experiences his day as normal. He's a lawyer, so he does his lawyer person things in England. He goes to get sandwiches. He kind of experiences his day. He feels all the regular feelings, like you hate work, you hate your coworkers because they keep bothering you, and someone bumps into you on the train home. And you kind of get home and you're like, oh, man, that was a day. But he uses his time travel to go back to the very beginning of that day and then takes the time to appreciate every little thing that was good about it. And that as a concept is just so enriching. Like, imagine if you could refresh every single day to appreciate it for what it gave you that was good. Now, obviously, time travel isn't a real thing, but if I had to pick a fictional character, Tim being the one who can do it, I would pick him.
Wow.
That might be the most wholesome use of time travel in the history of media.
Honestly, that's incredible. Yeah, no, there's no MCU movie that's using time travel to appreciate the day.
No, it's a very stark contrast to the characters we'll be talking about who engage in their time travel today, but...
And I don't know. That's very genuine, and I very much appreciate your answer, though. You know, and still pulling from that movie, which apparently I need to go watch the movie again.
Yes, you do. It needs to be one of those films you add to your every few years. I'm going to watch this kind of thing. Like every time you watch it, you get out something a little bit different. And look, the time travel was a big thing, but he's got a family. He's successful. He's making enough money. He's got a house in London, which, as you can imagine, millions of dollars to spend on that. You know, his family has a house in Cornwall, which, if you don't know, is a spectacular part of England to live in. There's everything around this guy. It's perfect. But the time travel is the bit that really rounds it all together, I think.
Really sells it.
Just
for
the cherry on top.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's a great pick. I have a new anime and an old movie to go watch. This is why I ask these questions. You know, so
get your anime and sci-fi rom-com recommendations brought to you by Super Bracket Bros. Yeah,
put it on the box.
That's what people come to Super Bracket Bros for. So one last thing that I you know, that we have to talk about now that we're in the second round of the tournament before we move on to the main discussion today, is we have some Instagram poll results to go over. So every other Sunday when we post our episodes, we're also posting a poll on Instagram. So you can come to our Instagram and come on vote on every single one of these matchups. And we're going to be discussing the results of those right now. So the first one, we have Cable taking on Karen Murphy from the Dresden Files. And now Eli, tell me if your thoughts on these numbers. Cable coming in with 75% of the vote to Karen's 25% of the votes.
I'm very surprised Cable didn't get higher. For one, it's like, you know, he's a technologically advanced super soldier fighting a regular cop. But more so, I'm surprised because Karen isn't the most popular character you know, that we've ever had. It was kind of my pull to bring in the Dresden Files book series. So I'm happy she got 25%, honestly. I was expecting it to be much more skewed. So my Karen fans out there, represent.
Yeah, I wonder how many accounts Maggie from McNally's podcast has. Yeah, no, I thought that was interesting as well. On the other side, we got a couple of Overwatch characters. We have Ash and Bob. Now, our audience disagreed with us here, and Matt, I want to get your thoughts here, because you were there, you were here for this episode. Our audience voted 70% in favor of Ash and Bob and only 30% for Juliana Blake.
So anytime that you gather data, you need to embroil some bias in there. Like, you should understand the sample audience that you're getting, and I've got a feeling you've got a lot of Overwatch fans in your audience. Maybe you're not a lot of Deathloop fans, but if we're doing, you know, the proper data crunching here as well, Deathloop at the time, now that's changed, but at the time it was exclusive to PC and Steam and PlayStation. So there may be an entire subsection of your audience that had no idea who Juliana was if they were Xbox gamers, but luckily that has changed now. It's come to Game Pass, so if you want to give Deathloop a try, jump on the Game Pass train, and I think you can get 2 weeks for free on that, or 3 months for $1. I don't know what you lads in the US get, which is far and away from what us Aussies get, but yeah, I've got a feeling that's probably what skewed the numbers a little bit. But I think anyone who did that vote and has gone, okay, I voted that, but I'm wondering why Juliana won, I think listening to the episode that we did is the best way to figure that out. Not just because we decided, but it was one of the funniest episodes that I've been a part of, I think. just that opening from Eli where we turned it into one of the Overwatch openings, where Juliana had masqueraded, swapped with Bob. And there was a smack to the face. Yeah, all that stuff together, I think it just makes sense. But look, to be perfectly honest, and we'll discover today with this close matchup, that Juliana, I think, in terms of general powers and stuff, far outweighs Ash and Bob.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think that's the... Me and Eli have been analyzing these results for 3 years, and that's the best analysis anyone's ever given us. that we have done either.
Matt, we would like to bring you on as our statistic consultant for every episode.
Yeah. Are you a fan of Overwatch at all, Morgan?
Yeah, I played Overwatch for years, unfortunately. I just couldn't get out of it.
Unfortunately.
on first glance, would you give it to Ash and Bob or Juliana?
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's a robot. I mean, he's huge. Dude's huge. Because all it takes is Juliana messes up once. And she's a human. People mess up. People make mistakes. That's a robot. I don't care who you are. He'll just punch you and you'll just evaporate. Your back will break. Your rib cage will split open. It's a robot, dude. He's huge.
Morgan coming in. I don't know what else to say. Morgan coming in with a Transformers argument. Big robot smash. Let's go. I love it.
Plus, Ash and Bob always kills me on Overwatch. So,
and then we get to the heart of the argument. The heart of the cards there. Okay. Yeah. Good. No, I was just curious, but without further ado, let's chat about today's subject. So let's chat about Juliana first, shall we? So Morgan, I was tipped off from your appearance on Tales from the Backlog with Dave that you played through Deathloop, and I really enjoyed your conversation together about the game. But I'm hoping you tell our audience a little bit more about what you thought of Deathloop.
It's interesting. Deathloop, I don't know if y'all are privy to this, but Deathloop had an incredible review round in games media.
It did.
10 out of 10s, 9 out of 10s. I just really did not feel that same way about the game, and I think because it's just not a game aimed towards somebody like myself. The kind of game that Deathloop is a game, I think, for people that really love the small, minor details in a game and really want to take in a game world, a very detailed, smaller game world. This is for people that like to read lore bits. This is for people that like to really get to know every single character and every intricate detail about what the mystery is behind this island. And that's the exact opposite kind of gamer I am. But I had a PS5, and I was like, dude, why am I not playing the PS5 exclusive? I've got to play the PS5 exclusive that's out today. So I bought it, and I actually... I'm probably the only person you'll ever hear say this on the show. I actually like the multiplayer way better than the single player, which is weird because I didn't hear anybody talk about the multiplayer whatsoever. No. Yeah, you play as Juliana in the multiplayer. Mm-hmm. So it's really fun, especially because a lot of these people playing Cult, they're here for a single player experience that's very lore heavy and reading and fine details. You just hunt these guys down like fish in a barrel. It's nothing. And so Juliana, she feels very powerful in that respect because I never felt like in danger from Colt. I really did feel like I was playing with him, like play with my food a little bit before going for the kill. So I really quite enjoyed the game in that respect, you know, just mm-hmm. the gunplay and, of course, the abilities, which were really inventive, really neat, just fun to look at. And Arcane, as a studio, has always been known for that being their strength. Prey was another game that they made that also has a really good weapon variety, really good power set, very speedrun friendly. So even though I was a little bit... The crux of that episode, I was on Tales from the Backlog with Dave. The crux of that episode was like, me and him didn't care really about the story. We didn't care about much of anything that was going on, but you know, it was really fun, and we just sort of messed around, and it was a nice little experience. Not bad, not great, but... It certainly gave me a lot to think about, and I'm glad to continually get more chances to talk about it because I was just sort of sitting on this information in the back of my head with nothing to do with it. So I'm glad to be here to be able to explore it a little bit more, maybe give myself a grander appreciation of this because obviously a lot of hard work went into it, and it's you know, a beautiful game to look at.
I am so happy I have the two of you together today. Because if memory serves correct, Matt, you played the multiplayer one time.
I did, and I tried to jump back into it again more recently.
Oh,
but as you can imagine,
not the most populated servers.
No, but also I think a lot of the people playing it are based in the US because it was almost unplayable for me. Like setting the scene. You know, what people say about Australian internet is true. But I have probably the best that you could possibly get. Like, I've got fiber to my house. I'm paying enough that, you know, I can download things very quickly. Upload is not a problem. And yet, the game for me when playing as Juliana and invading people's games was just unplayable. Like, imagine trying to rotate the camera 180 degrees... And every time you try, it just resets back to the position because it just can't, you know, move fast enough to hit the server to enter the player's game to make that happen. Yeah, it's basically, I can't even describe it. It's
That hurts.
Extremely faulty. Yeah.
It physically hurts me. I can imagine it so clearly in my brain and how frustrating that would be. But I mean, I appreciate that you tried.
It's like a nightmare. It is. It's like, oh God, here he comes, run, and then zoop, back again, run, zoop, back.
But regardless, you did appreciate the story. And I mean, we had quite the conversation about, you know, like the lore and the island and all that stuff. So I'm glad that we have two sort of different perspectives on Juliana today. I think that's going to make for some interesting discussion. But we have here on Super Bracket Bros, this is a continuous tournament. So we're pulling Juliana out of the Star Wars universe and into our antechamber. She's going to get all healed up. Her weapons will be reloaded, repolished. You know, any energy is going to be replenished here. But perhaps the most important part of this aspect of the show is that she's going to get a chance to review the tape on her opponent. So our Super Bracket Bros gnomes and dwarves are going to run up to her with our Super Bracket Bros pad and show her the tape. She's going to be able to, you know, rewind, scrub, do everything that you want to do to, you know, what you're going to do when you're researching somebody. And she's going to be viewing Cable versus Karen Murphy. So I kind of want you to jump into the mind of Juliana here. What does she think of Cable?
One thing, Juliana seems like a pretty perceptive character. I mean, she's hyper snarky and you know, a bit vitriolic, but I think she has enough smarts to be analytical. I don't think she's just a jump in and see how it happens fighter. So I assume she's going to be looking at this tape and seeing, wow, this guy's a beefcake. And he won with overwhelming force. Like, I remember in the episode, I wasn't giving Karen Murphy a snowball chance in hell, but she put together a better fight than we were anticipating. So I think Juliana's looking at that and like, okay, this guy is tough. He's got big guns and, you know, is brawny, but you know, he seems like he could be overwhelmed by just attacking from different angles, you know, not playing, you know, almost like Cable's a giant tower. You know, you don't go straight at it, you go around it. So I think Juliana's thinking about that, taking him down bit by bit.
Definitely. And I think stealth would be on her side, where most times I've watched Cable on, well, most times, Deadpool 2, I watched Cable.
The one time.
He's very run through the brick wall. Don't find the window to crawl into. So he might be, if she disappears quickly or just can't be seen for more than 30 seconds, then maybe he'll just wander around and start blowing up stuff. I don't know.
Cable smash.
Yeah.
Plus Juliana does have a few different slabs that she can use that are actually good if she were to get discovered, I think, if a stealth failed situation, which inevitably, of course, it would. And so I think, like, there's actually kind of a balanced, I think there's a balanced approach that could be taken here, even if the initial, you know, fight doesn't go well. I think there's still a way to recover from that. It's not one of those all hope is lost. It's not an Ash and Bob situation where a robot punches you. You know what I mean?
Right.
It'll be fine.
I do think she benefits too from Deathloop. They have very futuristic style weapons, so I think the armaments of Cable, she's not going to be too phased by, because obviously they are powerful, but you know, if you think about the wide array of armaments in Deathloop with all the science fiction doodads and whatnot, I don't think she's going to be too intimidated by the big pulse rifle and disc grenades.
The slabs are important though, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Morgan, because another discussion point we had in that episode was the masquerade slab, which allows her to essentially swap visual positions with someone else. And fortunately, with Ash and Bob, there were two individuals there that she could swap with to trick the other. Whereas in this case, depending on where we're going to be, there may or may not be people there. As I understand Super Bracket Bros episodes go, there's probably not going to be anyone there, in which case she could be at a bit of a disadvantage.
Yeah, sure enough. I was also just going to mention, a future gun is still a gun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely correct. Wise words of wisdom.
I like Morgan's wise. Big robot and big gun. He keeps us on track.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think certainly, you know, I don't think we have enough evidence to say that she's going to, you know, like, consume every bit of information, but she's going to watch it. I think she's definitely going to know what she's walking into, at least, which is a good thing.
And, you know, being stuck in the loop for so long, she is, like, technically speaking, several decades old. Like, she's how old is Cable? Like, she's probably older than Cable at this point.
I would think so. I mean, Cable, I don't think we have any reason to believe he's, like, older than, like, Josh Brolin. I mean, I would assume, like... Yeah, you know, like, I don't think, like, it's not, I feel like they would make it a point if he was like 100 years old or something.
Yeah, because it's like two different time travels with the Cable. It's just going from point Z to point A, where Juliana's like just resetting constantly. So, it's just time travel shenanigans.
She's battled hardened, essentially.
She's lethal Bill Murray from Groundhog Day.
Dark Bill Murray.
Juliana, the darkest Bill Murray. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
It was the hidden director's cut of Groundhog Day, the chaos ending.
Groundhog Day at Black Reef. Yeah, I think.
Now I'm imagining Bill Murray blinking on buildings.
He might as well have. It would have looked like that to the citizens. Like, he's just running around doing stuff very intentionally.
Let's hop into the other side, and I'm curious to kind of hop into this character's mind as well. But let's talk about Cable. So Matt, we can start with you this time, and I'll check in with both of you here. But Matt, we've discussed some big franchises. We've talked about Terminator. We've talked about Overwatch, two extremely recognizable names. But tell me what your experience is with the franchise, aka the Marvel Universe.
I'm all up in it. I watched Iron Man when it came out, and I've been following it ever since. And look, the person that enjoys Deathloop that Morgan mentioned is pretty much me. Like, I'm detail-oriented guy who beats his head against brick walls until he gets the thing that he wants. And borrows deeply into the details to find stuff. So post-credit endings and things like that, that was all very appealing to me as the films came out. But Deadpool is, of course, a very interesting film with Cable only featuring in the second, of course. And the great thing, the really interesting thing, is that Josh Brolin also was the character Thanos. And the very complex relationship between between MCU stuff and properties has become a through line for Ryan Reynolds. So the complexity around the Deadpool character, while it doesn't tell us much about Cable, is interesting actor-wise, because we had Ryan Reynolds as Weapon X in X-Men Origins Wolverine. Then Deadpool came out of the woodwork to be one of the highest grossing films of all time. And then Deadpool 2 came along with a lot more humor, a lot more X-Men included in it. But now they're trying to tie all those universes together. But actually, I can probably lean into my personal podcast here a little bit, The Dead Drop, where I talk about game news. At the time of recording, an article has been released that says that Marvel doesn't intend for the video games that have been made to contribute to the MCU. So having a Deadpool game from back in 2006, I think... Morgan, you might be able to help me out on that one.
I think it was later than 2006. 2006 was Gears of War. It must have been 2010. It was right before the next gen systems came out, because there was a remaster that came out immediately after, and people were pissed. I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. And we also have the X-Men films trying to tie all them together, even though there's games being made under the Marvel name with Wolverine and Wonder Woman. Like, there's a, obviously that's DC, but there's a lot of confusion happening around all this stuff. So I think the important thing to note, talking about anything that comes out of Deadpool, is that it may not be canonical, but it will be funny.
And yes.
Cable is potentially one of these things where we will be talking about Cable as a character from his experience in Deadpool, as a very serious individual with a lot of firepower, able to, you know, topple trucks, run at the speed of a car. But in the film, he comes across as a simpleton, because Ryan Reynolds, as his character Deadpool, is, you know, poking fun at everything. So it really polarizes the character a little bit. But in terms of the MCU and how it ties all together, I think we'll just have to wait and see. But again, leaning into my news aptitude again, it was announced yesterday that Deadpool 3 will be coming. And that's going to star Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. So wait, Deadpool is getting Wolverine.
Oh, that's man. That's a sigh.
The yeah. sigh.
Oh, man.
Sorry.
That's so good. Sighs are welcome.
I'm just thinking about Red Letter Media, and when they say no one's ever really gone, they really mean it. They just can't let anything stop.
This is
never
precisely what I mean. Like, Deadpool, the newest trailer for Deadpool 3 talks about how they're being inducted into the Marvel Universe, but we know Wolverine has died in Logan.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Hugh Jackman said he wasn't going to do another Wolverine. We know that people are tired of Wolverine, less, you know, the sigh that we just heard. and X-Men is making its way in, but we know that Hugh Jackman's Wolverine probably won't make it into the Marvel Universe writ large unless they do something really weird with the X-Men, which could involve Michael Fassbender or, yep.
So,
yeah,
Ian McKellen. Ian McKellen?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. There you go.
Hashtag Gandalf. yeah, how they, like, the X-Men universe is complicated enough already. Bringing that into the MCU is going to be very amusing. But
for the listeners at home, you can't see this, but in the video, we see behind Matt Bliss a giant cork board with lines stretching to every Marvel property trying to figure this out.
Yeah, yeah. But my lesson here is that anything in Deadpool, don't take as canon, just sit back and enjoy it. And tying it all back together again, I did enjoy Cable as a character in the whole thing. I don't think it'll contribute to the MCU at large.
Yeah, which is a bummer. I mean, I honestly, like, I like Cable enough that, like, I would like to see him be grumpy with Wolverine. You know, I think that would have high entertainment value. So, like, I kind of wish, you know, they would do that. I don't feel passionately enough about Deadpool that, like, I really, like, my passion for the MCU has been deteriorating, especially, like, in the last year or so. So, you know, I may not be the voice of the typical Marvel fan at this point either. But Morgan, you know, I can infer a lot from the epic sigh, but tell me more about your Marvel experience, fandom, maybe?
Well, I started with Iron Man as well. I was a kid. It was cool. I liked it. And then it just kind of kept happening and it kept going. And then it all led to Avengers 1, right? And that was pretty hype. Everybody loved that. It was like, whoa, look at it. They're all on the screen at the same time. And then Captain America's like, Hulk, go smash. And, you know, the audience was cheering and clapping. But I don't know, man. It just kind of kept happening. And I became an adult and I got a few different jobs and it just kept happening and it just won't stop. And now we don't even have to think about movies. We have to think about like 7 or 8 different TV shows on Disney Plus all the time. And then you miss details, and I just like, I don't have time for this anymore. And I'm emotionally zapped. I'm done. I think a really good parallel to Marvel right now is what DC is doing. DC just can't get their universe off the ground. They have no organizational skills. So what I kind of like about DC films is of the Batman, for instance, he's not going to cross over. That's just going to be a Batman universe. Right. Thank God, less to think about. I just want to go watch The Thing and not have to think about a million other things. Joaquin Phoenix and The Joker, that's not crossing over. Thank God. One less thing to think about. And the strength of the movie must carry its own momentum. When I watch a movie, I want to get the intended message of the film and the energy of the film in one complete package. I don't need it to lead to something else. It doesn't have to. If the artistic vision behind it is strong enough, cohesive enough, that's all I need. That's why I wasn't really particularly thrilled that they were making another Joker movie. I was like, no, we said all we need to say. Well, maybe they'll surprise me. Who knows? But basically, I'm pretty down on Marvel, dude. And the whole, I'm sorry about the giant sigh for the Wolverine.
No. It's just like, it was great. It was great.
Yeah. It's just like he had such a beautiful send-off. It was perfect, man. And I was like, damn, that's good. This is a good movie. Now he's back. And it's just like, can we just let something just rest for God's sakes? So Logan obviously has a very special place in my heart. And, you know, I understand definitely the idea like, oh, it's Deadpool. Don't worry about it. It's going to be its own thing. It's fine. As long as the fans are happy, as long as the people get paid, it's all good. I just wish we could have a little sanctity. For once, for something, for God's sakes. I mean, I thought that was as good of an exit as Hugh Jackman was going to get. That was excellent, you know? But
well, that's why I feel like I would almost take this as like a PS, you know, fuck you kind of thing. You know, like Hugh Jackman, like if he came back for a proper MCU movie, I'd be more scared. I'd be like, you're going to bring him back. You're going to loop him in on all the things, you know, like... I don't know about that, but Deadpool, like, seems to be in its own, like...
Best case scenario.
You know, honestly, I think it is, because I think it's just going to be him fucking around. And, like, you know, like I think, like, if Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman are having fun, then I'm having fun, too. So, let's refocus here. Let's talk about Cable himself. So, Cable, in this fight, he just got done just got done defeating Karen Murphy.
And Willy Chocolate Wonka's Factory. Chocolate Factory.
Chocolate Factory, of course, naturally. I nearly forgot. Moving into the antechamber, probably, you know, getting the arm a little buffed, getting the energy rifle, you know, reloaded. Pretty much, you know, doing what he's doing at the beginning of Deadpool 2, where he's sort of, you know, refreshing his equipment, getting it all set and ready to go. Now he's handed the Super Bracket Bros pad. He's going to be viewing the tape on Ash and Bob versus Juliana Blink. What does Cable think of Juliana?
Cable comes across, I know he's sort of like this, you know, stone-faced, super serious guy, but he does have emotional moments, particularly with his family too. So I'm wondering, like, does he approach this as like super analytical soldier mercenary type, or is he coming through as kind of the meathead? You know, Deadpool, you know, insults him to be. I'm curious what you guys think about that, because that could vary. Like, I feel like the whole bit with Cable in the movie is that he's the opposite of Deadpool. You know, he's super serious. He doesn't crack jokes. He's just this lumbering force of, you know, seriousness. Do you think, like, yeah, I don't know. I think he approaches it with analytical ability being a soldier, but I don't know if he's, like, you know, grafting strategies in the sand before he goes in.
I think unless the little pad that the gnomes or the dwarves have handed him has a trailer for a pre-fight Juliana, which is kind of like a inner world where time loops are infinite. A girl abandoned by her father pursues an endless career of murdering him to, you know, fight off issues where she was abandoned by her father after her mother died. You know,
I think
that's the only thing where kind of Cable looks at it stone-faced and then there's a little tear running down his cheek. If you're just watching the fight, I think he gets pretty annoyed and angry and, you know, gets ready to do his thing. I don't think emotions come in unless Juliana runs in and starts shouting it across the battlefield. Yeah, it's a bit hard to see through Juliana's facade that there's, you know, Cable could appreciate Juliana as his lost daughter, you know, just reaching for a father figure.
Yeah, I think in a different scenario, one where they're not being pitted against each other violently, I certainly think, you know, they could they could get along, find some missing pieces in each other, perhaps.
Is this the time travel support group?
Yeah.
I use time travel for evil.
Yeah. I go back to thinking about how he's a soldier, right? You know, like it's reiterated many, many times. He's gone through many different wars. He's obviously very experienced. And so I think that he's going to, you know, take full advantage of this. You know, I don't know if it's more than Juliana, you know, like I don't know if he's coming in necessarily any more prepared, but it's certainly going to be helpful to see all the slabs in action, to see her weaponry in action, to know that she's no joke. Because certainly he goes into Deadpool 2 very cocky, like very certain of himself that he's going to accomplish his goals. And then Deadpool comes out of nowhere and sort of, you know, he's like, who the fuck are you? Kind of, you know, a meeting in the prison. And so I think certainly knowing what he's going to go up against, I think is going to be helpful to him.
And of course, her main weapon being the sniper rifle. This is a Juliana that's a mouse and keyboard user. So I think he would take that very seriously. All it would take is him looking at Juliana, kill a couple of Colts out when they peek their head out from a million miles away. And he'll be like, okay, we should probably take this a little seriously. Here's what we'll do. Yeah, I think he would have a game plan specifically to counter long range. Long range you don't want. You don't want long range on Juliana because she is just a person, but it's a person that's got, again, decades and decades and decades of experience doing this every single day for fun or as their job. It's like, I think that Cable would probably come into this thing a small amount of trepidation, because I don't think he fights enemies like this, not like this, that battle every day forever and it's their whole life to fight. I think it would be a little bit more than I would like to think he'd be cognizant enough to have that self-awareness to say, okay, maybe we should go all out for this one. Use everything, you know, every trick.
Moving on, let's get into the fight, shall we, boys?
Let's do it.
So, this is a fight to incapacitation, whether it be death trapping unconsciousness or forcible battlefield removal. We take these characters as they are, morals, ethics, and everything included, except we are going to make them fight, even though that's... I don't think we'd have any problem forcing these two characters to fight each other. They seem rare to go. It's also important to note that they know they're in a tournament. They know they are getting into a fight, and we are going to be dropping them into our tertiary random location. So let's roll the dice and see where we are headed today. Are either of you familiar with a fantastic sitcom called It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Yes.
Since 2 weeks ago, yes.
We are headed to Patty's Pub. This is the bar from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Really not noteworthy at all, besides that. It's extremely downtrodden. If you're unfamiliar with the show, it's kind of a dumpster dive, right?
It's literally a dive, like just wrong side of town, just
like the king of dives, though. Like it holds a special place, but
is the title, the gang gets into a multi-dimensional fight.
the gang gets into a time travel fight. Yeah.
Absolutely. Or Charlie dies as collateral damage to a time travel fight.
Charlie, the winner of our our nonsense bracket we did a couple weeks ago. I don't know how much of a chance he would stand against Juliana or Cable. He is the Rat King, but I think... when our portals open up in Patty's Pub, I imagine on either side of the bar, it's a pretty small space, so they're starting pretty close to each other, actually. But deep into the wrong, like Eli said, the wrong side of town in Philadelphia, we have Patty's Pub. Charlie comes out of the bathroom with a bat all bloodied, bolts out the front door. He's not dealing with this shit.
Wait, can I please...
Please.
Because Juliana's masquerade ability.
Oh,
can
no.
She please impersonate?
We are now in the biggest question that I had for this matchup. Please finish that thought, Eli.
No, I just want to see her masquerading and trying to be just confusing the gang.
she could not be dumb enough to impersonate someone. you cannot impersonate any of the It's Always Sunny crew. Like, they are so extreme in their idiocy and self-assuredness.
Yep.
Usually we don't have NPCs in these fights. Just, I don't know, it's just not necessary. But I do love the image of the gang running out the door.
Yeah, they probably look at what happens and they're like, oh my god, Terminator's real. I need to kill all the chess players or something like that.
No, I can see Juliana like kicking the door open, walking in Wild West style, and the gang is just like, oh god, we usually don't get customers. And then like Cable bursts through the door. Or no, bursts through the wall, I mean. And it like lightning all around him, and they just go, all right, we're gonna leave.
Yeah.
Or but yeah, Charlie, deal with the bar. You tend to the bar.
Since Charlie, I think, is canonically indestructible, he can be in the fight. He can be there. As the winner of a bracket on Super Bracket Bros, he deserves as much.
He has impunity.
Yeah,
he's the first honorary NPC.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, so we open on Patty's Pub. We've got these two facing down. So I ask you, how does this fight break off?
I think immediately. Juliana does not want to be seen, so she probably uses the shift ability, and then uses the invisibility ability. The invisibility ability. What is that thing called again? I've got it pulled up right here. Aether. I think it's called Aether.
No, she uses Aether. Yeah, yeah. No, we're calling it invisibility ability. You've spoken that into existence. That's what we're saying. That's so much better. I totally agree. Like, Morgan and Matt, you've played the game, so you know when you play Juliana. I haven't played it, but from reviews, it gave the impression when you play the multiplayer, it's basically like cat and mouse game. So I think Juliana, at the start of this fight, is going to want to be the cat, and she's going to want to start playing mind games, like you said, Morgan, go invisible, start shifting around, really throw Cable off his game immediately, because I know if she thinks, if I stand tall, I'm going down, like, I can't take that firepower. So, yeah, I think immediately, like Morgan said, just invisibility shift and start laying her, like, traps and things.
You're absolutely right. She's going to be the one avoiding, right? Because if she tries to take Cable on head on, it's simply just not going to go well. She doesn't have the endurance. She doesn't have the she doesn't have the toughness to be able to take him on directly, especially that energy shield, because that energy shield is probably the single most defensive thing that exists in this entire tournament. You know, it's extremely hardy. I don't think we saw anything get through it. The only thing that we saw do any damage to it was his own pulse rifle that, you know, launched him, you know, across the prison. So, like, she's going to be trying to find an angle. She's probably going to be taking the back door. You know, like, she's going into the alleyway. She's trying to find a way to a rooftop somewhere where she can get a height advantage. And then Cable's just going to be, I mean, in pursuit the entire match between these two, I think.
There is a cooldown to the abilities. If he had an opportunity, it wouldn't take long, like a few seconds, but you'd have to know exactly where she is when the cooldown starts. I don't know the exact particulars of Cable's tracking abilities, you know, with his technology, but if he's able to do that, he would be able to corner her pretty quickly, because Patty's pub is not exactly a sprawling locale. It might not take much, even with all the trash and crap like that, to find her.
But we know they're cheap. And we see Cable, like, grabbing some Ethernet cables dangling from the ceiling to try and get the layout of the prison and information that way. We know that the gang hasn't paid for security cameras or anything, so...
Yeah, there's no Wi-Fi at Patty's pub, I can guarantee. No.
It does bring an interesting point, though, of... Like, we see in Deadpool 2, Deadpool was giving Cable a hard time just because he is so unorthodox. And I think Juliana brings that same energy. She's not as much of a force of chaos as Deadpool is, but she is so wily and so just loves to mess with her prey. I can see her really getting into under Cable's skin and causing him to, like, you know, not be at his A game.
If there is a situation where she's on full cooldown and she's trying to find a position, she's not able to do so, and he is able to somehow track her. She does have a slab called Havoc, which does let her take damage. So she can just take damage at certain points and then increase her own damage. So it could be an offensive defensive option to be able to, like, kind of turn the table on the fight really quickly in a situation like that. So even though she is physically much weaker than Cable and her guns are not exactly future guns like he has, the fact that she's able to basically be anywhere in the building and turn invisible on and off, and when needed, reflect back and be aggressive, I think that makes it something to where Cable would need to pick his shots very well and use very certain kinds of weaponry to be able to do it, because I don't think he's going to be able to get close enough to just punch her or deck her or something like that. It would take a long time to do so. I don't know what kind of stamina he's got to do that.
You've hit the nail on the head. I think, in complete irony, time is the thing that Cable needs most of to be able to get a full advantage on Juliana, because, like, he has to penetrate the things that she's been doing for herself for hundreds of years in those loops, and she has almost anything to counteract whatever he's got. He has to be the full tactician. He has to time things perfectly to get in those cooldown moments and exploit each advantage or disadvantage. And I don't think it's fair, but I was going to say, to be fair, I don't think there's a visible way to see what slab is currently active on Juliana either.
Would that be right? You wouldn't know until it happened.
Yeah. So he might have to look for visual cues, like time it after the invisibility and then after an ether and then, you know, maybe after a havoc. I don't know. It might be really hard.
I just sort of imagine the fight being like the entire room being messed up and people zipping around and Cable just shooting wildly and then realizing he's not getting anywhere. And then basically just zipping around and Cable thinking about what to do and then just zipping around and nothing is happening. And he has to sort of figure out, okay, so I can't just shoot. Because shooting wildly with a gun into the side of the building, it's not exactly going to help you. You're just going to cave the building in on yourself. You have to be actually really delicate. Maybe it even is a bit of a disadvantage that they're at Patty's Pub. It's already a dilapidated building. I really feel like all it would take to bring the whole thing down is a couple of well-placed shots.
Yeah.
And then that's game over for Cable, because Juliana can get out of that. I don't think Cable's going to be able to get out of that. I don't know. It seems like it's actually kind of a disadvantage for him to fight here.
Is this the first one where both combatants die?
Yeah, Cable gets the perfect shot, knocks her out, and then also drops the building on top of himself.
Yeah, mutually assured destruction.
For a few seconds, he was the victor.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's an interesting point, because like I sort of imagine like Juliana fleeing to the rooftops of Philadelphia, essentially. You know, like going somewhere else, but if she can strategically piss him off enough and get him to drop the building on himself, because like Cable's angry, like he has rage, he has frustration, and like Deadpool takes advantage of it. And you know, like Juliana's just like as sadistic, like she could be in a Deadpool movie, you know, like she has like that capability. And so like I don't see, like, as much as it's a video game and a movie, like I don't see them clashing like all that much, as far as like, you know, like some matchups are ridiculously like clashing, like they don't make any sense together. These two kind of do. But what does she do? Does she make that decision to leave? Does she stay? Because if she stays, then Cable can close the distance. And I mean, I guess, how tough does Havoc actually make you?
Makes you pretty damn tough. You could take a room of people when you have Havoc. I was cheesing the end of the game with Havoc really hardcore. One thing that we didn't bring up yet is that you upgrade these slabs. And if we're talking about a mouse and keyboard user, Juliana, they would have full upgraded slabs. This would be the top tier. It's beyond just what you would see in the trailers. It's a much upgraded version of that. And Juliana, in general, is just much stronger compared to Colt, gameplay-wise. It's a lot easier to play as Juliana. I think her cooldowns are shorter, too. So it's like, it's actually kind of scary to think about, to be trapped in a room with her. I feel like you would die very quickly if you were not a character that had immediate area of effect control, some sort of defensive shield, like you said, with Cable. Cable has that, so he's going to survive any, I think, ambush. I think he could survive an ambush or two, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder what there would have to be. I guess what we're looking for is, what's the difference maker to stop the stalemate? Because nothing would really be happening yet. And I don't know that Juliana would have the, not wherewithal, but I don't know if she would have the idea to want to kill him immediately. Because it's like you said, she could be in a Deadpool movie, but she's also just mean. And I think it's from her years of living and dying and killing. And she would probably want to torment him a little bit. It wouldn't, because here's the thing. It's not just about like, oh, there's a guy that I have to fight. It's a guy that's shooting stuff at her. She's going to take that as a personal challenge. She's got her personal pride. I feel like she would want to extract as much from this as possible. I don't think she'd go anywhere. So at that point, it's really Cable's game to lose. He just has to wait, I think, and look for the perfect moment. But it would be, it almost feels like a coin flip, unless somebody knows what would be the ultimate difference maker. There's like a trump card here somewhere that I haven't really thought of yet.
Yeah, I know we talked about Juliana's personality overtaking Cable, but you brought up a great point of that Juliana is kind of a, you know, loves to run her mouth and mess with people, and Cable is just super straightforward, super serious. Obviously Deadpool, you know, was able to exploit that, but you're right, in this situation it could easily backfire on her. So we have kind of, like you said, the stalemate of almost personalities, these vengeance driven time traveling murder hobos just. and you're right, like, Juliana has the slabs, Cable has his futuristic technology, Juliana has her wiliness. Cable has his straightforwardness. So it I love fights like this because both combatants are so different fight-wise. But yeah, I feel like they're equal in their own ways.
To me, I think maybe, and I'm not certain about this, but the shield is what I keep going back to, is because at the end of the day, he doesn't have a cooldown timer on his shield. You know, they're he is not, and I hate to get into like the meta-ness of it, but when the fights are really close like this, you kind of have to. He's not a video game character. He's not constrained in the same ways that you have to constrain a video game player. And so, which normally, you know, like a video game, like you want to feel powerful, and video game characters have access to so much because there needs to be so much variety for the player. And so normally I feel like sometimes that gives the player, the video game character, an advantage in fights like these. But today I feel like that's Cable. You know, maybe it's just from the limited, like we get one movie with him. And obviously you could talk about comics and things like that, but that's not the version we're talking about. And so I really feel like maybe just having that limited sample is almost benefiting Cable.
I see what you're saying. It's like there's a lot of imagination space and potential for Cable to do anything you can think of because we're exposed to so little. And like as soon as you said he's not a game character, he doesn't follow rules that games require, I automatically thought, oh God, he's going to say plot armor. But the strongest armor you could possibly have.
True, yeah.
But no, you with as tight a matchup as we have here, it kind of has to get into the meta a little bit. And if the bit that balances the scales one way or the other is going to be us saying, well, their potential and their rule space favors Cable as opposed to Juliana because Juliana has rules, whereas Cable may not, then it kind of has to be the deciding factor, right?
And also, one other thing to consider, too, is that this is taking place in Patty's pub, which means that she does not have the advantage of resurrecting. She only gets that advantage by being on the island.
Yeah.
So this is a fight where she would have to be more conservative, and she would know that. She's smart enough to know that. She can't just run in there the way that she would with Colt. She actually would need to rely, I think, on the hit-and-run tactics that we were talking about because, you know, you only get one life now. This is it. This is all you get. So it's interesting that we were talking about the movie version of Cable specifically because before this podcast, I forgot he was in that movie. I had forgotten Deadpool 2 entirely, and I was like, what are they talking about? And I was like, oh. Because you see, in my mind, when I thought of Cable, I would immediately think of Marvel vs. Capcom 2. And if it was that Cable, he would just win automatically because he can telepathically control that gun. Like, he can just shoot and hit the beam everywhere. There wouldn't be anywhere for her to hide. But if it's movie Cable, he just does not have that advantage. And Juliana also does have a slab for telekinesis. But again, if we're going back to the shield that Cable has, he could block stuff. I mean, what's she going to do? Throw a freaking chair at him, a bar stool at him? That's not going to really do much, you know?
Pick him up?
She could pick him up. You think she could pick Cable up?
I don't know. Is there a weight limit? I don't think.
She could pick Colt up. She could probably pick Cable up. I mean, he doesn't have that much stuff on him, right? He didn't come into this thing, like, geared up with the
only thing is, like, the cyborg aspect of him, like, the metal arm and stuff might be. But, I mean, like, if she's, like, in Havoc, which, you know, amplifies offense. Does it amplify her offense as well?
She takes damage in, and then it turns into offense. So she does way more damage after when she fires her guns.
Interesting, interesting. Because, like, I'm thinking, like, she could manipulate it in such a way. She uses Havoc first, takes damage, teleports behind him, behind the shield.
Oh.
That could be the strategy, you know, because, you know, I think about how many shots Cable himself can take. But, you know, just get rid of the shield for a second. Talk about how many shots that he can take. Certainly, you know, like sniper to the head, you know, you're done. I mean, like he has a fleshy skull, right? You know, like I don't think there's much there, but he can probably take several body shots. Certainly, if he blocks it with his arm, I think he can block anything that Juliana. But if he does get hit, I don't think he takes that many more hits than Juliana without Havoc. topic.
Yeah, they're both pretty susceptible to that, especially since Cable's using normal bullets and not magic bullets like Juliana would be using. I almost feel like a Havoc buffed bullet would definitely go through any cybernetic arm. We don't know about the shield, because like you said, we never saw anything penetrate the shield, so we can't even make that determination. But there is a case to be made that maybe as the fight goes on, she just wears him down. Maybe she can get behind him, use a Havoc-charged just shot with her SMG, just take him out, or at the very least, handicap him to be able to go for the kill shot in the next engagement. It's like most of the fight would be almost stationary and figuring out when to engage, and then when those small little bursts of battle happen, it's like very consequential. So you don't know like who's going to come out on top, but if Juliana is able to do that, and again, she can manipulate stuff, she can move things around. Maybe she could mess with him a little bit, I'm not sure, but...
Let's go full Deadpool here. Like, teleports behind the shield, kicks him right in the nuds. That's the... and prays that it's not the cybernetic bit of him.
You know? It's not cyber nuts crunch just as good as organic.
We would find out in this fight.
Have a confused ball kick.
Now you're thinking fighter game style. The things that you yell as you do things.
So, as we wind down the discussion here on Super Bracket Bros, each of us is going to give an out of 10 out of who we think will win this fight. And the out of 10 is to gauge our confidence in that given fighter, see how confident we are in come out victorious. And the out of 10 also represents if we do tie. If it's a 2-2, whichever side is more confident in their given fighter will be the fighter that moves on. If we have equal confidence, we have to go into an overtime, so to speak. But Morgan, first time on Super Bracket Bros, do you have a decision in mind?
I think I have to give it to Juliana Blake. I didn't think I would say that before the start of the show, but thinking about it now, I don't know, especially if it's movie Cable. If it's movie Cable, she's winning, I think. I think 9 out of 10 fights, because here's the thing. All it takes is one mess up, and it's that 9 out of 10 situation. Maybe Cable just finds her. Maybe he just sees her as she's teleporting, and he just gets the shot, and she can't take more than a shot. That's it. So that's the end of the fight. So I think, but 9 out of 10 times, he's going to get exacerbated by the, the banter, which she does a lot of, and her banter's mean. It's not jokey like Deadpool. She's mean. She goes for the jugular. The Havoc is going to be really hard to deal with, even with that shield, because she could use the Havoc as a deflection, too, to kind of, like, make him hunker down. She can force him into a position if she wants to. I just feel like it's her degree of control over where she is and her visibility and the entire building itself that gives her the edge here, because being able to go behind with powered up bullets almost negates any kind of advantage being a cyborg would have, you know? I think 9 times out of 10, Juliana's killing his ass pretty easily.
Matt?
I am less certain. I'd say an 8 out of 10 for Juliana as well, for all the reasons that Morgan just said. I would sit back and enjoy this fight. I think the humor would be spectacular. In addition to the barbs thrown, would be biting. Cable would be very angry, but I think 8 times out of 10, he would be the one to eventually go down.
Eli?
I'm jumping on the boat. I'm on Juliana Blake, but I'm going... I like the descending order. I'm going 7 out of 10 times. And I think what put me over the edge was 2 things. One, the location. I think it benefits Juliana Blake more than... If this was a very, sparse location with not a lot of cover, not a lot of verticality, I think it would be Juliana fighting, like, just, just tower, like, trying to defeat a castle, essentially. But because she's in this small, confined area with multiple levels, like, I'm looking at your reference pictures, I can see her going on the fire escape and, going on the roof and doing some shenanigans. So I think the location benefits her. And I think Morgan mentioning the Havoc. Havoc just seems like such an important ability defensively and offense. It's such an interesting offense and defense boost. So I think that the abilities really benefit Juliana. So, and also, like, just Deadpool, got under Cable's skin. And Juliana is of that same ilk but can teleport. That is so annoying. Like, not to reference Overwatch again, but if you fought a really good Tracer, you get so tilted. She's just like the most toxic Tracer. So, yeah, no, I'm going to go Juliana Blake. I'm going to go 7 out of 10 times.
So I'm going to complete the ladder here. I'm going to go Juliana 6 out of 10 times. I think the biggest point I made was like, do we worry about video game limitations here? And I think that's why I'm only 6 out of 10 times, because I do see that as a significant limitation that cable can take advantage of. You know, if those timers don't quite work out, Juliana's just a person, you know, like she's going to get taken out by an energy rifle. I think the thing that limits cable is the location. Like, he can't just go all out explosives. One, Juliana can evade all of those explosions, and he risks toppling a dilapidated building on top of him. Pretty much any of the buildings in the area, even if they leave Patty's Pub, you know, like he's not finding a safe way to be able to use the full breadth of his abilities. And I think that Juliana is clever enough to get it done. I give a lot of credit to Cable's like soldier mentality. He's very tough. You know, he's very straightforward. That shield is the shield's the biggest thing I almost couldn't get over, and I almost went with Cable, but I do think that Juliana has seen maybe not the biggest variety, but she has seen a lot of combat herself. She'll find a way in this. I'm not super confident in it, but you guys are more confident, and so thus Juliana Blake is going to be the fighter moving on in the tournament to the Epic 8. So, gents, is this sort of how you expected today's episode to go going into it?
No.
I had a suspicious feeling based on like how strongly we talked about Juliana in the last episode, but yeah, he was a one seed, you know, he was voted there for a reason. He is extremely strong, but
I'm starting to think that Juliana's superpower is the ability for people to reason enough to eventually arrive at her as the winner. Like, she can time travel. She has all these slabs, but, you know, again, ironically, given enough time, we will either choose her because we can somehow find a way to make her the winner, or a battle requires enough time where she will take advantage of it and be able to push it over the edge.
Yeah, and I think, too, like I said, just being able to teleport and be really annoying. Like, forget the firepower. That in itself is almost more dangerous. So, yeah, I think Juliana is really, you know, she's staking her claim in this. Because she's a four seed, correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. So, yeah. That dangerous four seed, you know?
She's going to be facing the winner of last week's matchup, where we discussed Black Widow versus El Mariachi, where we had the hosts of Game of Thrones on to discuss that one. So, if you haven't caught that one, definitely go back and give it a listen to find out who Juliana is going to be taking on in the Epic 8. But before we go, definitely have to give a shout out and a thanks to both of our guests today, Matthew and Morgan. I really appreciate the both of you taking the time to come on Super Bracket Bros and, you know, talk some nonsense with us. I really truly appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, man.
But Morgan, please tell us more about the Intergalactic Pine Cone and what you have going on and where people can find you.
You can find me at twitch.tv/intergalacticpinecone. If you go to YouTube and just type in Intergalactic Pine Cone, it's like the only thing that comes up. There's nothing even close.
I can attest to that. Yep.
I play a lot of Nintendo games. I play a lot of retro games. I post clips and videos and VODs often on my YouTube. So it's actually an active channel with real stuff on it, and not just a VOD dumping ground. I put a lot of work into it, so I'd highly appreciate it. If you enjoyed any of this today, consider checking it out if you're into really gameplay-heavy-oriented games, where we talk a lot. We talk a lot. Mm-hmm. We do a lot more than just the typical Twitch stream. People have called me the anti-Twitch streamer. I don't understand the culture. I don't really fit in. I don't really have a place there, but it's like, you can just come into my chat, basically, and just talk to me about whatever, and we can just chill and hang. It's a very, very calm place. It's not an angry place. It's a very good place. There's a lot of positivity, and the community that we've built is, you know, we're still small, but really, really loyal and really dedicated, and I really appreciate all of them. And, of course, I appreciate all of y'all for having me on today, so thank you very much.
Yeah, no, I can completely verify that all of that is true. Definitely please check out the Intergalactic Pinecone. That's why I felt like you were a good fit for this show, because, you know, you're not the typical angry, and maybe not typical, I shouldn't generalize, but, you know, the stereotypical Twitch streamer, you know, that is full of rage in their heart and looking for, you know, clickbaity moments to be able to, you know, you have really thoughtful dialogues with your audience that I appreciate getting to experience through your YouTube as well. But Matt, on the other side of things, please tell us a little bit more about the Dead Drop. Tell us a little bit more about what you got going on in your life.
Well, for anyone who caught the previous episodes I've been on, I've actually got a bit less. Podcasting is the thing that I'm trying to get off the ground, really. I did have the Teaching Culture Cast, which was a podcast that was devoted to helping teachers that are planning to be teachers learn. That's a really bad way to put it. People training to be teachers. It was for mm-hmm. them, as well as teachers in the profession. It's interviews and like trying to find out a bit more about the stuff about teaching you don't usually hear about. But I'm putting that to one side at the moment, just because being fully upfront, trying to do a teaching podcast and a video game news podcast, as well as my job, which has nothing to do with either of those. Like there's no cross section in that Venn diagram at all. So it can be a bit taxing, but it's still up if you're a teacher and you want to check it out. The Teaching Culture Cast is there. But the Dead Drop is the project that I'm working on heavily at the moment. Twice a week on a Monday and Thursday, at least for Australians, you'll get 10 minutes of video game news, 7 to 8 articles that are interesting or that I've picked out of a lineup. In the track of Morgan there, I try not to pick the clickbaity stuff, although sometimes it does help. But yeah, I'm trying to deliver video game news in a way that cuts through all the fluff, stops people having to, you know, scroll through Video Games Chronicle, pick an article, and not have to worry about getting the only useful sentence out of that article and having to read the rest as fluff or things that they already knew. Like, I try to distill that down into something that that will provide value. And if nothing else, you can brag to your friends in a conversation and say, hey, so, yeah, I definitely heard that Netflix is creating a video game studio in Helsinki. And they'll be like, whoa. Yeah, so if that tickles your fancy at all, head to deaddroppod.com to find out more about the podcast. It's in any podcatcher that you've got, any platform. I also try to do more episodes than just the news, and there's one that I tried that hasn't really taken off, where I ask for requests for news from my audience to see if they're interested to find out a little bit more or address a rumor or something they're curious about that they haven't been able to find any information about. And I try to explore that and expand it in an episode that will also be 10 minutes. But look, I'm trying to bend and pivot, see where we end up with it. And on the side, I'm also going to start editing other people's podcasts if I can. You know, everything quiet on that front, but if anyone listening happens to be a podcaster and is like, oh man, I hate doing that editing bit, then maybe hit me up
every
as well.
Every podcaster.
It's an untapped market as well as a tapped market. Like, I don't think there is any podcaster out there that enjoys the task, or even the ones that do kind of think about the time they could be spending elsewhere. So if that's something that anyone listening is curious about, then hit me up as well.
Yeah, please hit up the Dead Drop podcast. I at the very least, you have no excuse not to, because they are less than 10 minutes. Like, please at least go listen to an episode, like, and kind of figure out if it's your vibe or not. It's definitely mine, because I used to be a diehard, like, I would check the IGN app every single day for my news articles. I literally don't anymore. Like, I check it like once a week because I listen to the Dead Drop. I spend less time on my phone because of the Dead Drop podcast. So definitely go check it out. I appreciate what Matt's doing over there. But if you are looking to catch up with Super Bracket Bros, a whole lot has happened in 2 weeks. We have doubled our Patreon count. One of those patrons is sitting amongst us today. So thank you to Matt Bliss for becoming a patron of Super Bracket Bros, along with Kate Kobala of the Game of Groans podcast. And as always, thank you to Emily and Andrew from Your Friendly Neighborhood Gamers. Those are our four patrons right now. And that means, since we have four patrons, our monthly subscription feed to Buttsprout is completely covered. Super Bracket Bros is no longer running at a deficit. It's absolutely incredible. Honestly, the most amazing creative thing that's ever happened to me. So thank you to our patrons who are helping keep Super Bracket Bros around, which also means, which may be relevant to you listening right now, me and Eli have begun our Portal 2 co-op playthrough. Well, the first video is already up on the Patreon, so if you're interested in getting a extremely comedic, not very analytical,
oh boy, you have no idea,
view on Portal 2 co-op, well, you know, that's there for you. And in addition to that, I'm going to be putting out at least monthly episodes, some sort of video content related to Super Bracket Bros, whether I've done some research episodes, but now it's going to be on a regular cadence on the Patreon. So if you're interested in that, definitely go take a look. And yeah, let us know if you think it would be worthwhile. But thank you to everybody that is listening out there. I genuinely appreciate it, whether you're a patron or not. It's just honestly amazing to me. Thank you so much for having joined us on Super Bracket Bros. Wait, no. Eli, do you have anything else for the beat?
I guess dubstep never dies.
I gotta go. A mouse and keyboard Juliana's after me.
Thank you so much for having joined us on Super Bracket Bros. On behalf of myself, Jay, our awesome guests today, Morgan and Matt, and my time-sliding co-host, Eli. Remember, no true hero is a one-trick pony. You're ready.